And welcome to Alternative Perspectives. You are listening to Greg Bossen. I am your host. And we've got an extremely interesting show today that we will talk about in a second. And we've got more than one guest coming. But before we get to that, just making sure that you understand the opinions that are expressed on this show are exclusively those of of your host, which is me, and our guest, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WRFG's board, staff, and the like, board, staff, volunteers. So everything that you hear here is simply my opinion and that doesn't necessarily mean that the radio station agrees with it, although I am always right. And so you should pay very close attention to everything that I say, because, again, I am always right. All right, so I was going to play you a song, but sometimes things don't happen the way that they were meant to, which is perfectly fine. So let's just go ahead and get started. So tonight's discussion, and as you may know, if you don't know, you're listening to Alternative Perspectives, and this is the Atlanta's only local radio hour that is devoted exclusively to issues revolving around the LGBT community. But there are other letters besides LGBT. There's Q, there's I, and then there's A that stands for asexuality. And I'll tell you what happened and why I decided to do this show. It was really interesting. I was, a couple of weeks ago, I was on a flight on the way from Atlanta to Los Angeles, well, San Jose, to do a conference, and I saw a movie, a documentary, actually, about asexuality, which is called, oddly enough, asexuality. And I thought that was just really interesting. It's not something that people talk about. And so I thought, well, you know, there needs to be a little bit more about this. And perhaps it's something that I should think more about. Then when I got to the conference that I was going to, shockingly, there was an individual there, a woman that I've known for a few years, who came out to me as asexual. And yes, asexuals need to come out as well. So I thought, okay, well, the universe is telling me something here. So we need to do something about, do something on asexuality on the show. And so I have a guest here. And then we have two people that are going to be calling in. But who I have is Daniel Lomax. He is a 24-year-old gentleman who has recently graduated from GSU, and his profession actually is he is a drag queen named Molly Rimswell, which took me a while to get, but I figured that out. And say hello. I want to make sure that everybody can hear you, Daniel.
Yeah, hello. Welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
That's definitely better. Thank you so much. All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Cool.
Pleasure to be here.
You sound wonderful. You really do.
I've been watching a lot of those ASMR videos, so it's like a dream come true.
And he told me that his friends, and do I call you Danny or Daniel?
Whichever.
Okay.
Whichever feels the most natural.
Daniel. You look like a Daniel to me.
That makes sense. I don't think anybody's ever called me Danny, but if you wanted to be the first, I wasn't going to stop you.
Okay. Well, who knows? I may change my mind. initially, we'll start with Daniel because I think that's a quite cute name. And he told me, by the way, that people always told him that he has a really great face for radio, and but it's not like that at all. I think he's actually very cute. So,
aww.
I'm giving you that. Not that I'm, you know, trying to come on to you, as that would be.
Well, I don't think it'd get very far anyway, considering the topic of today's show.
Oh, good. All right. So I think we've got a fun show. So before I talk to you a little bit, I'm just going to state just a couple of the statistics that are out there that I actually was unaware of. But there was actually a survey done in Britain in 2001 where people were asked a number of questions. This is a survey where they ask all kinds of questions to try and just come up with some statistics about the population. But one of the questions was who they felt sexually attracted to. And there were five answers basically they could choose from. You just check the box. One of them was, are you sexually attracted to men? Are you sexually attracted to women? Are you sexually attracted to both? And then they went ahead and stuck, are you sexually attracted to neither? And of the 18,000 respondents, about 1% of them, 180 of them, checked that they had no sexual attraction to either. Well, it doesn't sound like very many people, 180 people out of 18,000, but that's actually 1%. 1% doesn't sound like much either, but there's 3.5 million people in this country, and that would mean 3.5 million of them do not have sexual attraction to either men or women. So that's one point that was just sort of shocking to me, and there's been very little research on it. We actually have a gentleman, Dr. Anthony Bogart, who's going to be calling in, and we'll be speaking with him a little bit about some of the research that he's done. He's an expert in asexuality. I don't know if he identifies himself that way, but and then we have a woman, Cole Brown, who's calling in later on from an organization. But we're going to start with you, so because you're the most important. Oh, you snort when you laugh.
Of course. I've got to add insult to injury.
So let's see. So I guess one of the first questions that I would have for you is, I don't know, when did you first know, I guess, that this is something that you were?
So I'd probably have to say this is something that I knew something was off kilter from being like a sexual being. Basically around the time where those puberty really starts to happen around middle school, where everyone's like, oh, I have this huge crush on so-and-so. I had this huge crush on so-and-so. Never really hit me. So it was more kind of encouraged to perform, to be like, oh, yeah, I think so-and-so is so cute. And so I would kind of knew something was wrong because I knew that I didn't feel strongly about anyone.
Was that in high school or elementary school?
Middle school. So
in
that real
school.
Rough time,
yeah.
Middle age, where all of the kids are just terrible.
Right.
Yeah, everyone's just awful to each other. So because I didn't have any interest in like any ladies just outright, they were like, oh, so you're the gay kid.
All right.
So you're the gay one. You talk flamboyantly. You love musical theater. You're the gay one. And so that label stuck with me for a while. I was like, oh, I'm the gay one.
Right.
And I held on to that all through high school. I drew into musical theater. And it wasn't until I got to college.
But never had a sexual experience.
Oh, no, never. Never.
Okay.
I think I tried one time to have a sexual experience in high school. And it ended with me frantically laughing at the person and then running out, just like no clothes, just running as frantically as I could, because it was just so uncomfortable and embarrassing. And so I got to college, and it wasn't until I started taking a gender and sexuality class in my sociology department that they were like, oh, there's a word for that. It's asexual. And I was like, oh, that makes so much more sense than just me being broken.
Right, right. So were you dealing with, since you were, I guess you just identified yourself as gay, even though you weren't necessarily attracted to other men or boys, I guess, when you're in high school or college. But did you experience like homophobia during that time period, or were you shamed?
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
it was the 200 plus pound gay kid who loved musical theater. There's a lot to
right.
lot to shame in this homophobic society, and the something that praises more of a heterogenic masculinity.
Right, right. So in college is when you first started to just, oh, from the class.
Yeah, from the class.
Oh, that's wild. So then what happened from there then? Like how did that inform your life?
So I guess it just gave me the vocabulary to understand that that was something that I was, and me not having a sexual attraction to anybody didn't mean I was necessarily broken. It just meant that I was looking for something besides a physical connection to what I would consider a friendship or a partner or anything. I wasn't after physical contact. I just wanted something that was going to benefit myself and the other person.
So is that when you, well, what I'm wondering is, were you pursuing relationships at any time during that period, high school or college?
I mean, to an extent, everyone kind of performs the way that the media informs them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're expected to try to be this thing for so long. Mm-hmm. Especially, there's a documentary that talks about masculinity performance standards, whereas there's this typical stereotypical label where ladies are supposed to like be the ones that put out, whereas men have kind of an equal backlash of a pressure to perform. So there was so much pressure for me to ask somebody out, or me to pursue somebody, or me, because I grew up in an old country family, go courting.
Courting.
Go courting.
I love it.
Okay. And so there would be times throughout that weird, frantic time, because it was a disaster, if I could sum it up in a small sentence. It was disaster of a time trying to figure out what was going on. So I would ask people out, I would go on dates, and they would make advances, and it would be something that would be completely unwanted. And when I would try to explain that I just wanted to get to know the person, it was almost seemed like I was talking a foreign language all of a sudden.
Were these men or women?
Men, primarily, okay. Because this is right. When I still was operating under the gay,
right.
Like, stealth.
Right. So when you were struggling during this time, because it sounds like it's a struggle when you don't have a label for it and you're not sure how you feel. I mean, what was that like for you? I mean, were you depressed? Were you anxious? Like,
kind of a combination of all of the above, because you're not exactly sure what's wrong, but you know that there's something that's just not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
So you spend a lot of time with a lot of trial and error, and sometimes you can make some really, really bad missteps and end up hurting some things that you didn't know that were at such risk along the way.
Hurting yourself or hurting other people?
Again, I think it's both. Mm-hmm. Hurt people kind of thing, where because you're developing and you're trying to figure out what makes the most sense for you in that present reality, sometimes the other person is developing at a different speed and y'all's interactions collide and it's not the most healthy.
Developing at a different speed. I mean, can you give an example?
15-year-olds are as 15-year-olds or 16-year-olds are, where they want to advance things quite quickly, because we've all read Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
It takes 3 days to fall in love and get married.
Yeah.
So they wanted certain things, and when I would express that, no, I did not want to go much further, well, they thought, well, I can just take much further.
Okay.
And it gets a little, yeah.
So a little bit of abuse then.
A little bit of abuse, because they don't understand that no means no sometimes.
Right.
And that no really is the final word. And just because we were holding hands or just because we were cuddling does not mean you have the go ahead to continue or further a situation.
Right. So then I guess eventually you came to terms with this. Did you ever have to go to therapy for it, or how did you... How are you feeling now about it? I guess I should start with that.
I think, yeah, working backwards, now it was kind of finding the whole situation was like a bright light epiphany moment, because it did give me something to work towards. Before then, I grew up in an evangelical Christian family. I'm the first person in generations upon generations to not be a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't teach words like this growing up.
Right.
So finding a word that existed and finding that there was like a nomenclature and it was in a book and that there were other people that identified that way gave me a bright light to work towards and to like expand. And because I love research, I just immediately found as many things as I could find.
Yeah. And from what I can tell, that seems to be a lot of what has happened. One of the women that we're going to be speaking to later, Cole Brown, she is, on the board of directors of AVEN, which is the Asexual Visibility and Education Network. And that's something that it's a nonprofit organization. But I don't think you knew about that when I talked to you earlier, right?
I actually hadn't. You actually informed me of it. So I guess there is lots to be learned all around.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, thank you so much for now. We're going to take a quick break for a second. But we are talking to Daniel Lomax. And we are talking about asexuality as it affects him and as it affects, I guess, the community at large. You're listening to WRFG 89.3 FM. And we're back. And we are speaking with Daniel Lomax, who, it's so weird to just, who is a professional asexual. That is not what you are at all. You're actually, tell us where you perform and what you do.
You can find Molly Rimswell all over town. Molly mm-hmm. Rimswell is at Midtown Tavern, Mary's, MSR, anywhere that they've got a drag show and a dollar. I'll be around because loving glitter is a part of the brand.
All right. Okay. So we've got a guest that's coming on in a couple of minutes here, a few minutes. So I've got I guess I'm going to go ahead and ask the obvious question that people are wondering.
Come on, hit it.
I know. So let's talk about masturbation, shall we?
Okay.
Tell me how that worked for you. I mean, it's weird, but I assume you did masturbate, do masturbate. Like, what is that situation about?
I mean, I am capable to experience physical stimulation. Yeah, mm-hmm. that is something that is available to me. It's asexuality for me is just, I don't have the drive to do something like that. It's not something that I wake up with that I'm like, oh, yeah, I need to masturbate or, mm-hmm. oh, I need to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, sometimes like masturbation happens like maybe once a month, and it's more or less to do something with my hands when I'm just bored at home.
Oh, okay. I'm going to get into it a little bit because I in the documentary that I watched, somebody was even asking this question. I thought it was quite interesting. But is there what are you fantasizing about, or are you fantasizing about when you masturbate?
Nothing. There's no fantasy. It's just, it's kind of like a chore. It's like washing the dishes.
Right.
It's just something to do for 20 minutes to get your hands kind of dirty.
Right. Did you ever feel like there was something wrong with you?
For a really long time, absolutely. Because like I said, I grew up in a pastoral family. So you're expected to grow up, find a wife, become a pastor, have kids, foster them to be the next generation of pastors, repeat.
Right.
And that was the formula. But I didn't follow that formula, so I felt kind of like the black sheep running around for a little while.
Right, right.
A little bit of a rough patch there.
Does your parents know then, or how are...
Oh, no. They still think I'm straight.
Really?
Yeah, they still think I'm a straight person, which I know everybody listening to my voice right now would be astonished to know that.
Well, I mean, really, what is the definition of a straight person versus a gay person? What is that? It has to do with their sexual attraction, I assume.
I guess so. And I think it also has a lot to do with the way that they choose to believe and what that means.
What do you believe?
I believe that love is love.
So you, do you identify as straight then?
Oh, no.
Okay. They think you're straight.
They think I'm straight.
All right.
But that's another conversation for another time.
Yeah. And this is another question I was going to ask, but is there any sense of loss, something that you feel like is missing because you don't have the ability to have that physical connection with someone? Or the interest, I guess.
Absolutely not. I am more than fulfilled in all of my friendships and the people that I interact with. There's so much love that I'm surrounded mm-hmm. by. It just doesn't have to be a physical touch or a physical need.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, it's something that, I mean, you wouldn't miss it if you didn't want it. Right. So, anyway, all right, well, I'm going to play an interesting song here.
Interesting.
I think it's an interesting song anyway.
It's not that I'm troubled and it's not that I'm rude. I just need to find someone who doesn't need to be nude, to love me forever and to love me true, because asexuals are not just some prudes. I don't need to have sex to show you my love. There are so many other ways you haven't dreamed of. I can take you on a trip to somewhere you've never been. I will do your laundry time and time again. And if anybody tells you that you're unnatural, just turn the other cheek. You don't have to be sexual to find love. I can see that you're pretty, that much is true, and it's not my fault that I don't want to do the do. So respect my choices and respect me, because not everyone has those certain kinds of needs.
All right. Pretty nice song. What do you think, Daniel?
I digged it. I was all about moving and grooving over here.
Very cool.
We had a dance time.
All right. So we have a guest, it's Dr. Anthony Bogart. And anybody who's done any research into finding out about asexuality knows Dr. Bogart. He is a professor at Brock University and has done much research on asexuality and has also published a book called Understanding Asexuality and has also written a number of papers on it. So he is definitely an expert. And Dr. Bogart, can you hear me and are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Yes, so, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
All right, great. So I guess I kind of saved the statistical stuff, so I thought you could talk a little bit about how you got involved with studying asexuality, what your original findings were, and then where you are at this point, or where we are with the research.
About 2002, I ended up doing research on traditional sexual orientation, so basically looking at what makes a person gay, what makes a person straight. And I was doing a reanalysis of a data set looking at sexual orientation, and the question basically posed to people was, who are you sexually attracted to? And they had a traditional kind of question that says, well, one being men, seven being women. But they also gave people an option, and the option was, I've never felt sexual attraction to anyone at all. And I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting, pretty cool. And I realized that that option, never feeling sexual attraction to other people, is basically an option of what might be called the fourth quadrant, or the fourth group of sexual orientation, asexual people. So I started to do work on asexuality, including in, for example, analyzing that particular data set, and I discovered some interesting things. One was that about 1% of the sample indicated that they had never felt sexual attraction to other people. There was also interesting gender difference, so there were more women than men. There was also some interesting work or interesting data that suggested that many of the asexual people were still in romantic relationships. So those are some of the findings of that original study. It was ultimately published in 2004. And it probably did launch the sort of modern view or the modern take on asexuality, and ended up stimulating a lot of research after that. So that was the original study, and then I did a number of other more theoretical papers arguing that asexuality is in fact a sexual orientation. It's a separate kind of orientation, like being gay, like being straight, or like being bi. It should be considered separate. And also suggesting that asexuality should not be considered necessarily as a dysfunction or a problem that needs fixing. And so some of the work that I've done since then, I think has supported that. And I think there's a number of human sexuality researchers who have done work on asexuality that agree with me. So that's some of the sort of basic findings and some of the work that I've conducted over the years.
Are you, I was in connection with that, about whether asexuality is considered some sort of a disorder or a problem. I think it was Lori Brodo, I think is her name. She's an associate professor.
Brodo,
yes.
Yeah, Brodo.
You probably are familiar with her work.
University
of British Columbia.
We collaborate on some studies, including on asexuality. So, I know Lori's work well.
Yes, she did. Apparently, she did a study where she was asking people that identified as asexual, asking them about their psychological issues that they were having or sexual problems. And she was convinced that she would find some sort of underlying deep-seated mental illness. In fact, that wasn't the case at all. No higher incidence of anything. Suicidal thinking, sexual distress, depression, anxiety, health problems, anger control program. It's all the same as it is for the general population.
Yeah, there's not much in the way of differences there. And so that gives additional support for the idea that you don't have to be a sexual being in order for, to function in society or to be a happy, well-adjusted person. And you don't necessarily even have to have a romantic partner, per se, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that some of the interesting work on asexuality has allowed us to actually view how sexuality and how life in general should be viewed in a sort of more open and complex way.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I know that we were talking about this before. Just because somebody is asexual doesn't mean that they necessarily wouldn't want to or be in a partnership or a relationship. And
That's correct.
And Daniel, I think you are. How long have you been partnered, Daniel?
Yeah, I've been in a relationship for about a year now.
A year now. All right. Now, in your work, did you, Dr. Bogart, did you happen to take a look at any statistics involving that, like? I know that you said there was a difference between being asexual and aromantic, which is kind of a different...
Yes. Yeah. Just to kind of talk about that a little bit more. People who are asexual don't necessarily end up not wanting to be in a romantic relationship. So if you're asexual, doesn't mean that you're aromantic. And in the original study that I did, about 50 to 60% of the asexual people were, in fact, in or had relationships. Now, that was lower than, for example, average heterosexual or gay participants, but ultimately 50 to 60% is still pretty significant. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
We have to distinguish between, aromanticism and asexuality. They don't necessarily posture.
Yes.
Some asexual people, are aromantic, therefore they're not interested in romantic relationships, but a good proportion of them are.
Yeah. Well, you said in your study it was 50 to 60%?
If I recall, it's been a long time. I may be a bit off with that, but it's certainly... near 50%, if I recall.
I wonder how many of them are in relationships at any given time. I wonder if anybody has looked at that.
There is lots of relationship-oriented kinds of work out there. I can't recall exactly if there is a figure that nails it for example, current relationships for asexual people. But it wouldn't surprise me if it was somewhere along the lines of 50% or so.
So it feels like your work has been very important to sort of dispelling some of the myths around asexuality and really empowering people that do identify themselves as asexual, as empowering them and helping them to feel like there's not necessarily anything wrong with them.
I hope so. I hope that has been one of the consequences of some of my work. Mm-hmm. Again, if you think about sexuality, it is certainly something that people are passionate about and can be a form of intimacy for people, but it, it can also drive people nuts. And so I don't think, again, you have to be a sexual person in order for you to be happier or well functioning.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you laughed at that.
Well, I laugh at it because
that's true.
But yeah, no. I mean, I've told more than one person
when it's true.
Oh yeah, no. If let me tell you something. If I did not have the sexual libido, I guess that I have. I don't. I think my life might have been a lot simpler.
Yeah. It's one of the themes in my book, actually, again, Understanding Asexuality. It allows us to see sexuality in a sort of broader view and allows us to think about it. Again, you know, sexuality is a wonderful, passionate source of enormous pleasure for people, but it also, in many ways, drives people nuts. And, again, you don't have to be a sexual person to be a fully functional, happy person at all. So I don't think you have to fix people who are asexual. I don't believe that at all.
Yes, definitely. And so I guess I'll end. And thank you so much for spending time with us, Dr. Bogart.
You're welcome.
I was very excited that you would be able to come on the air being an expert on it. But I wanted to ask you just one more thing.
Sure.
Or is there anything going on? What's going on today with research? Like, are you still looking at it? Like, what's the latest?
Sure. I'm still very interested in continuing to do some of the work that we've done on asexuality. And one of the things we're looking at is trying to figure out the causes or the etiology behind one's sexual attractions, right? Whether it's attracted to both sexes, whether it's attracted to one sex, or you're not attracted to any sex. And so we're looking at that. There's now some pretty good research suggesting there's probably a biological basis, or at least a biological predisposition to be gay, to be straight, to be bi, and also to be asexual. And so we're continuing to look at research and doing investigations on that particular issue.
Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it, Dr. Bogart. And again, the name of the book is...
it's called...
Understanding Asexuality.
Understanding Asexuality, yeah. Anyway, thank you for having me on.
Sure. All right. Okay, very much. Very, very nice talking to you. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, that was very interesting. What did you think, Danny?
I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's done a lot, and it got me into. I wanted to hear a little bit about your relationship. So you've been in a relationship now for a little over a year,
correct?
And so now Dr. Bogart made this distinction between being asexual versus aromantic. Asexual means you're not interested in sex, but aromantic means you're also not interested in a romantic relationship. So, and we've got another guest coming on in a minute, but. I'm going to ask you this. Have you ever fallen in love?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I would definitely say that I'm in love with the person that I'm with right now.
Okay. All right. So,
There are more languages of love just beside the physical act. You can love somebody with your actions. You can love somebody with your words. You can love somebody with just showing them that you think about them throughout the day. It doesn't have to always be the rough and tumble, rowdy dowdy of it all. Roll in the hay situation. You can love somebody with more than your body. You can love somebody intentionally with your words and your thoughts and your actions.
For sure. Definitely. All right. Well, let's take another quick break. And when we come back, we will have Cole Brown from Avon.
Ooh.
Yes.
Exciting.
And we're back. And we now have another guest, Daniel. You notice I called you Danny for a second there.
I did. I like the code switch.
All right. So we have Cole Brown. And Cole, I want to make sure that you're there. You are on the air. Cole, are you there?
Yeah. Hi. I'm here.
Hey, how are you? Hey, I can hear you good. I can hear you good. So, tell us a little bit about yourself, Cole, and how you got involved with the asexual community, I guess both personally and professionally.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a story actually very similar to Daniel's. Growing up, I grew up in a Catholic family. It's a little bit different on the Christian uptake, but the pressure is very real to conform to a kind of a predetermined fantasy of the white picket wedding and a very traditional lifestyle. And so when I was going through high school, I realized that I wasn't experiencing the same things that those in my friend group were experiencing around boys. And I couldn't quite understand the fascination with it. And so for a long time, I too thought, oh, I must be gay. This must be what being gay is like. But having no real exposure to that as a kid growing up, I didn't really understand what being gay was about until I got to university and realized, oh, I'm very much off the mark. I'm not gay. I'm not straight. So what am I? And for a long time, that answer was broken. And so for me, when I finally discovered that there was such a thing called asexuality, it became important to me personally to get involved with making sure that education and visibility for asexual people was put out there, so that people like me wouldn't spend so long in their formative years thinking, oh, I'm broken and I'm not worthy of love or a family or a happy future. And so getting involved in AVEN was, for me, a happy accident. I was looking for stuff for myself. I found STEM. They gave me the community and the space I needed to help understand what asexuality was. And from there, it was very easy for me to say, okay, well, you're doing this work for people like me, so I'll commit to doing this kind of work for other people so that hopefully in the future, kids my age will go through high school and they'll see asexuality as something that is an understood part of the human sexual experience and that it is okay to be asexual.
All right. Well, that I want to make sure that people can hear you because it's a little fuzzy for me, and I wasn't sure whether it was everyone else. Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm on a headset.
Ah, can you just talk on the phone? It might work a little bit better if you're just talking on the phone directly.
No?
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Say hello.
Is this
work? Yeah, I think this might work a little bit better. I can hear you. So okay. Say the name of the organization that you work for again, AVEN, or that you're on the board of directors of.
Yeah, it's the Asexual Visibility and Education Network, also known as AVEN.
All right. And it's been around for how long?
We just celebrated 15 years last May, so this will be our 16th year of operation.
Oh, wow. And how many countries are you in at this point?
So we have a number of online forums available in a variety of languages. We span about 120 countries, but it's languages that we focus on because of the online medium through which we communicate. So we have 14 partner organizations throughout the world in various languages, English being our largest online community with large communities in German, French, Italian, and so forth.
So, you know, speaking of the different countries, I'm wondering, where do you feel like AVEN has the biggest reach? Because I know that you're in Canada, and I know Dr. Bogard is in Canada, and I was just wondering, is there more activity going on in Canada related to this, or is that just a...
I think it's just a lucky coincidence.
All right.
I would say that science in Canada is quite open to exploring sexual orientation just because it's been a decided social issue up in Canada, so that might be why there's more prevalence and more conversation around sexual orientation in Canada. But from an outreach perspective, in the United States, AVEN does the majority of its work, reaching out to high schools to try and help fill in around sexual education, the gaps that asexuality and other sexual orientations that are often not taught, how to work those in so that there is a exposure to asexuality at a younger age.
Wow, because I don't know that down here in Georgia, I don't think they teach sexuality at all anymore. I'm not sure.
No, it's a no.
It's like that in a lot of places. The more conservative the mindset around children, especially with sexual orientation and education around that, it can be a touchy subject. So there's a lot of ways that asexuality is brought up in pop culture that's sometimes a little bit easier to digest, and it's usually around consent and consent-based culture, because being able to say no to sex in an empowered way is as important for asexual people as it is for people who are just not ready or not wanting to have sex. And so it can help to introduce asexuality in the realm of, you know, it's okay to say no to sex for a variety of reasons, including being asexual.
Is that one of the main focuses of AVEN, is to try and empower people? Well, I guess one of them would be to say no, and then just to provide education, because it sounds like a lot of people that are asexual, that's one of the things you struggle with, is trying to figure out, you know, what is this that I am? It's really interesting trying to identify that something's up because you're not feeling something. That's really very different than even what I discovered being a gay man.
It's a very gray place to be in.
Yeah, and a lonely place, I would think. What are some of the programs? I assume it's... I notice there's a lot of blogging that goes on, at least there used to be, on the AVEN website. Is that, you know, people kind of swapping stories or sharing with each other? What else goes on?
Yeah, AVEN is, we like to say that it's a place of self-discovery and procrastination. For the most part, you build your best friendships and your best communities when you're trying to figure out yourself in a comfortable space. And so for a lot of people who come to AVEN, they find that the answers to their questions early on, but being able to kind of hang out in a group of asexual people is something that is still rare, even in like queer communities and in meetup groups in person in those queer communities. So for a lot of asexual people, the ability to come to share kind of the jokes of like, I got asked today about, why I don't date, and I know exactly what that's like, and I have that similar story, and it's Thanksgiving, and they're asking why I didn't bring home a partner yet again, and I don't know what to say, and here's this other anecdote to help you feel less alone in the struggles that you're going through.
And
so a lot of it is user-to-user sharing of personal stories to try and, connect, find that connection with other people. And then at a higher level, the organization itself is responsible for putting on conferences. Usually we have a biannual alongside World Pride conference on asexuality. So it's called the International Asexuality Conference. And so it travels around the globe to try and do a little bit more education work to spheres that are just outside of the asexual bubble. So people within the queer community, people within sexual health or sexual education, as Dr. Bogart is. So we try and do a range of outreach through a variety of different channels to try and increase the general awareness of asexuality.
All right. Well, we have just a few minutes left, and I guess, Daniel, now, I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about the relationship, about relationships in general, because I think that's, that's probably one of the things that you struggle with, because if sex is not going to be really a part of your life, then what does that mean for being in relationships? So I guess I'll start with you, Cole. Are you single? Are you dating someone? Are you in a relationship now? Or
I happen to be in two relationships, because as an asexual person who discovered that polyamory met needs for my partner that I couldn't supply, I was open to more non-conventional arrangement.
Okay. And it's interesting. I want to have a show on polyamorous, definitely on polyamorous relationships. Now, and Daniel, you've been in a relationship for a little over a year.
I'm also in about two relationships as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One is based here in Atlanta, and the other one we've been together for about 6 or 7 years since high school. He is in the military and across the country, so our relationship means something entirely different,
mm-hmm.
but it's still just as important to me as, yeah.
Now, do you either one of you live with your partners?
The Atlanta-based partner, we spend about 4 or 5, 6 days together.
Okay.
So a little bit of cohabitation, but mm-hmm. not officially.
What about you, Cole? And tell me if I'm getting too personal.
One of my partners, and the other partner is going to be living across the street, so my goal of having family dinner is really coming to fruition.
And so have either of you experienced any... Well, you know what? I want to go back to this relationship thing for a second. So are either of you married? I guess no? Would you consider that? What does marriage mean?
A tax break.
I'm in a similar boat. I don't see it as necessary for my relationships, but I also think that it's one of those things that my parents wouldn't fully understand in a way that I'm ready to have a conversation about, and maybe Daniel, you're in a similar situation around that.
Absolutely. Same.
I wouldn't want to, I don't want to get into your personal issues so much, but then I'm gonna go ahead and do it. Well, actually, we only have a couple of minutes left. I guess, the thing that I wonder is there is this need that not everybody has, but I think a lot of people have, that relates to having a companion, some person that's a significant other, some person that's not going anywhere, and somebody that's basically, you're going to be their number one, they're going to be your number one, and they're going to be there until death do you part, which I think is part of what marriage is about. And I'm wondering, is that a need that either of you feel? Or is that something that, and if you do feel that way, is that something that you're getting in the relationships that you're in now, or?
I definitely think that traditional, right-on mindset is a little horrifying mm-hmm. to me, a little restrictive, because I believe that life is entirely fluid and people come and go mm-hmm. in and out of your life at a fluid rate for the time that you are both being beneficial for your growth as a person. Mm-hmm. So they come into your life for a little while, you help each other grow, and then if life sends you guys apart, then you can know and you can hold on and cherish the moments that you had with that person there. Mm-hmm. I'm not so much set out to find one person that I have to be with from beginning, middle to end. I'm out to experience life for the best that it can be and create as many meaningful relationships and be as productive as I can.
I think that's beautiful. What about you, Cole? How do you feel about what I was talking about, this need to have or this desire to have someone that's your significant person forever?
Yeah, I'm similar to Daniel in that I don't see it as something for forever. My goal is often when I'm choosing to date somebody, if we want to be together and we want to try and build a life around shared interests or shared hobbies or shared space and time, then that sounds great. For as long as it's comfortable and happy for both of us. And so if we're feeling like it's a productive and good fit, then, sure, forever, why not? But as a goal, on the outset, that's not usually it. It's how can we best support one another in this time? And if best supporting one another is walking away, then that is a conversation, a difficult one. But mm-hmm. I'm open to whatever is the best for, I guess everybody, but ultimately my own happiness. What I want from my life to live mm-hmm. it to the fullest.
Well, yeah, and I think what I would like the listeners to think about as after the show ends and think about when it comes to this is I feel like we're kind of pushing the standard boundaries of what a relationship means, and that's one of the things that's really neat about asexuality. First of all, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Second of all, it's something that happens and it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. It also means that you can have a fulfilled and complete life even though you're asexual. It also pushes the boundaries of what relationships mean. You don't necessarily have to have a sexual relationship in order to have a partner, and you don't necessarily have to have a partner in order to be happy. That's what I think is so cool about this. Cole, we're going to have to let you go. Thank you so much for your time. Can you just let people know where to go if they want to find out more about the organization?
If you're interested in learning anything more about asexuality or learning about Avon in particular, the address is asexuality.org.
All right. Great. Thank you so much, Cole. I appreciate you. And thank you so much, Daniel. Thank you so much for your time. We're going to go out with
you. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
All right. And thank you for listening to Alternative Perspectives. Next up, we have Peach State Festival, and what is it today? Where is he?
It's What the Folk.
Ah, it's What the Folk today. What
oh,
the Folk.
Oh, booyah.
Yeah,
well,
all right. All right. All right. See you later, Daniel. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much.
All right.
The sky is more blue in Malibu. Next to you in Malibu. Next to you. We watch the sun go down as we walk.